go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. We're talking with Soren Kern of the Gatestone Institute about the threat posed by what I think of as Sharia supremacism to Western societies. He has been extraordinarily effective in describing symptoms of this phenomenon in Europe and is helping to shed light on what it might mean for us here in the United States as well. And Soren, I'd like to talk a little bit about, in addition to the violent jihad, in addition to the demographic jihad and its various forms, in addition to this zakat or material support for terrorism, and there's, of course, other purposes to which zakat is applied, but some of it is supposed to go to jihad. There's also what the brothers call civilization jihad. Talk a little bit about how that operates in a sort of stealthy way. Again, much in evidence in Europe, but also here.
Yeah, well, what we have essentially is large organizations like the Muslim Brotherhood who are promoting this idea of civilizational jihad. This essentially is hollowing out the essence of Western civilization and Islamizing it. I think if you look back to the early formation of the Muslim Brotherhood in the late 1920s, it was sort of a reaction to the demise of the Ottoman Empire. And, you know, Islamic countries have always been historically under one leader, one dominant leader, the caliph. And the last caliphate, Islamic empire, ended really when Turkey allied itself with Germany in the First World War. And the victorious European powers essentially carved out the Middle East to the nation-state system that it is today. Essentially, the idea of the Muslim Brotherhood and the Islamic State is to undo the nation-state system, undo Israel and Syria and Palestine and Jordan and Saudi Arabia, and bring all of the, you know, all of the Islamic world back into, you know, one monolithic block. And from there, really to be able to be a pole, a geopolitical pole, as a way to expand Islam, you know, across other parts of the world. So the basic idea behind the Muslim Brotherhood is essentially Muslim unity, and through that Muslim unity to really challenge Western society. And so there's a lot more behind the Muslim Brotherhood that people often don't want to talk about.
Yeah. And when you say unity, I would argue it's dominating the Muslim communities for the purpose of essentially turning them into forces to achieve the triumph of Sharia. And, you know, you spoke earlier, Soren, about these ghettos or enclaves. Some have called them no-go zones. Typically, it's my understanding, they fall under the sway of people like the Muslim Brothers who are seeking to, as I say, dominate those populations and bend them to their supremacist agenda. Would that be fair?
Yeah, it is. It's fair. You know, I think that one of the methods of the Muslim Brotherhood and other groups like this is what I call the mainstreaming of Islam in the West. The idea that Islam is just another religion like Judaism, Christianity, that it's, you know, Muslims worship the same God as the Jews and the Christians. And they try to basically present all of the positive sides of Islam while maintaining their ultimate goal of civilizational jihad. Now, these no-go zones that you referred to in European cities, European authorities are often reluctant to admit that they exist. But we've documented at the Gatestone quite extensively. We have these areas in major European cities that are essentially off limits to local political authorities. And, you know, particularly in the case of France, in some parts of Germany, I'm writing an article right now as we speak on no-go zones in Berlin. And it's quite shocking how parts of the capital, you know, that only 20 or 30 years ago were divided between East and West, are now being divided between Germany and Islam-dominated, you know, groups.
Yeah, it's chilling. No physical barrier exactly, but there is, as a practical matter, a place that is off limits to not just the average citizen of Berlin or Germany, but even the authorities dare not go into them. Soren, let me ask you about the Brotherhood's role in countries in terms of the notion that they are an alternative to the violent jihadists. When you hear people talk about moderate Islamists, or when you hear people talk about the Brotherhood having eschewed violence, does that actually track with your understanding and study of the matter?
Well, we saw the Muslim Brotherhood in action in Egypt, and they were anything but peaceful. And that is why they've been removed from power in Egypt. There's a lot of, you know, taqiyya, it's an Arabic term, really, for dissimulation, trying to make something out to be what it really isn't. And I think that a lot of these Muslim Brotherhood groups have gained a certain degree of respectability in European countries. They present themselves as legitimate interlocutors between Muslim communities and local governments. But again, the ultimate underlying goal of all of this is really civilizational, you know, conquest, as you just mentioned.
It's a pre-violent form of activity, not so much a non-violent one. It's setting the stage. And would you agree with me, Soren, that if you look at the prime function, it seems to me, of the Brotherhood in countries like the United States, this isn't just over there, this is here, folks, is building an infrastructure that enables the aggregation of unassimilated Muslims in such enclaves and ultimately dominating them and turning them into engines of, again, Sharia supremacism. So I'm looking at things like mosques and front groups and influence operations that have, in a number of cases, been associated with actual violent jihadists, but have also, it seems, been in the service of incubating folks who may well be such jihadists in the future.
Yeah, a lot of the Islamist ideology is essentially designed or conceptualized by the Muslim Brotherhood over the last, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. And I think that the violent jihadists, the people in the Islamic State and the Caliphate, they all got their ideology from the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, that's completely clear. And I think the issue that you raise with the mosques is also very important. You know, if a Jew or a Christian goes to a temple or a church, those are buildings of gathering for worship. But in a mosque, it's really a completely different idea. It's much more than a building, because in Islamic theology, once a territory is Muslim, it's always Muslim. And so these are political symbols, more than anything, of the, you know, the spread of Islam, and that Islam is in a particular neighborhood or in a particular city, and it's here to stay. And I think it's very significant that President Obama and the Turkish president did the groundbreaking of a large mega mosque in Maryland, right outside of the capital of the United States. You know, it's a symbol that Islam is part and parcel, and that it's not going away. What you see in European cities is the idea that minarets should be taller than steeples in church buildings, and that they're changing the skylines of European cities as a sign of dominance, that Islam is dominant, that it's on the rise, it's ascendant, and it's not going away.
We keep ignoring this reality, I think, at our extreme peril. I want to come back in our final segment with Soren Kern to the issue of, are people who don't get this now increasingly populating the Trump administration? And if so, how could that possibly be, given the seeming clarity of the president about the danger posed by what he called radical Islamic terrorism? Right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.